Looking back on the week that was with a razor wit, irreverent humour and profound political and cultural insights, this is the James McPherson Show.
Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews must be shocked to find not everyone is happy with his desire to continue to devastate 6 million people at the whim of a press conference. Mr. Andrews responded to concern at his plan to extend Victoria's state of emergency for another 12 months by tweeting, "Getting back to normal won't ever be an option if we can't protect what we've already achieved," which translated seems to mean getting back to normal won't ever be an option if you don't grant me even more extraordinary powers to destroy all semblance of normal. The Premier, who for months has deemed it too unsafe for Parliament to meet, now believes it is safe for Parliament to meet just long enough to change laws protecting Victorians from unchecked power to give him even more unchecked power over Victorians. The Premier said his desired extension of the state of emergency does not change how long our current lockdown will last or increase the restrictions we face. Well, that's a relief, because everyone was perfectly fine with North Korean-style curfews, but they would have drawn the line at any increase in restrictions. You know, for instance, if the Premier made it illegal to drive the highway from Melbourne to Geelong to see your mum, that would be too much. Or if he imposed restrictions, say, to making the fence for people living in Housing Commission shoeboxes to venture outside even to buy milk. Well, he's already done that. Well, okay, but honestly, if Daniel Andrews suddenly said, you know, people had to shut down their businesses so they were no longer able to feed their family, that would be a bridge too far out. He's done that as well. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, he'll ensure long-suffering Victorians locked in their homes can't even turn on the television without Waleed Ali or Magda Sabansky hectoring them about obeying the government rules or else. Oh, he did that the other weekend. Mm-hmm. Right. Premier Andrews told a media conference last week, quote, "The most logical, the most prudent thing to do is to simply accept the fact that we have a need for rules. They're not about individual liberty. They're about public health." Let me read that for you again slowly. The most logical and most prudent thing to do is to simply accept the fact. You just got to accept this, Victorians. You just got to take this on the chin. You just got to accept it as purely logical. We have a need for rules. These are rules that have not been debated in Parliament. These are rules that have just been unilaterally made by Daniel Andrews and a chief health officer that no one knew existed until just a few months ago. And then he says, "These rules, which prevent you from visiting your mum on Mother's Day, these rules which insist that you close down your business so you can no longer make a living, these rules that say you're not allowed out on the streets after 8 p.m., he says they're not about individual liberty. They're about public health. He's saying the most logical thing to do is to accept that rules limiting your individual liberty are not rules limiting your individual liberty.
Huh?
Right. This man wants more power? Mr. Andrews has achieved the remarkable feat of making citizens of what we all regarded as the freest country on earth more afraid of the state government than of a virus. He told the media conference, "These changes are about saving lives and keeping Victorians safe. Nothing more, nothing less." Sure, well, how's that working out? No other state in Australia has implemented such draconian policies, and no other state in Australia has had so many COVID-19 deaths. But sure, keep going. Having had 6 months of sweeping powers to develop a strategy to destroy COVID-19 that instead spread COVID-19 while destroying the state's economy and the people's confidence, who wouldn't be excited to see what damage Premier Andrews can do in a whole year? Is it any wonder Victorians are finally starting to think that paying someone $400,000 a year to come up with "my strategy is lock you all up" and then "my revised strategy is lock you all up for even longer" is hardly a good return on investment. The Andrews government has turned one of the world's most livable cities into something the Communist Party of China would be proud of, all for a virus with a mortality rate of less than 1%. And now the Premier wants an extension of unfettered powers to keep doing more of the same for another 12 months. Last week, the coalition and key crossbenchers indicated they would vote against extending the emergency powers for another year. Whatever the result of the vote, the rest of us are just glad to know that our elected representatives in Victoria will actually get to vote on something. The Premier might like to recall Parliament on a regular basis and have them debate and vote on things like they do in a democracy. He keeps insisting he wants to get back to normal. Well, that would be a good start. Welcome to the James McPherson Show. This is episode number 9. Great to have your company as the worldwide lockdown continues. Yesterday seems so far away. People talk about when the lockdown will end and when we'll go back to normal or if normal will ever return. Who knows? But it's amazing, isn't it, that just yesterday a university degree in gender studies was valuable. Today a job at the supermarket is valuable. Yesterday a share portfolio was prized. Today a stash of toilet paper hidden away in a bathroom cupboard just in case is a wise investment. Yesterday all a woman wanted was Chanel. Today all that same woman wants is hand sanitizer. Yesterday, it seems so far away, we dreamed of holidaying in Italy. Today, we just hope the government will let us go to South Australia. Yesterday, we dreamed of being CEO of a major corporation so as to dominate the business world. Today, we dream of hosting the Zoom meeting so we can mute everybody. Yesterday, we aspired to live in a trendy apartment in a major city like New York. Today, we envy people who live in the middle of nowhere, far from anything and anyone. Yesterday, it seems so far away. Manufacturing was unimportant yesterday because the Chinese did it all for us. Today, grey and grimy local factories would be a source of community pride. Yesterday, public transport was for everybody. Today, everybody wants to travel in their own car by themselves wearing a mask. Yesterday, teaching our children to be LGBTQ allies was a priority at school. Today, we're worried about how to teach our children numeracy and literacy skills at home if they close the schools down again. Yesterday, we thought, you know, that transnational organizations like the United Nations and the European Union were the hope of world peace and security. Today, we understand it's every nation for themselves. Yesterday, we believed that the World Health Organization was going to warn us if a weird flu-like bug popped up 10,000 kilometres away. Today, we don't trust the World Health Organization. Give me my local GP by teleconference. Yesterday, we were in awe of beautiful celebrities who told us how to be virtuous like them, if only we had their life. Today, we're in awe of truck drivers who spend all night at the wheel getting food to our local store and nurses who tend the sick. Yesterday, universities boasted that huge numbers of international students gave them diversity. Today, diversity doesn't necessarily seem to be an inherent good. Yesterday, there was nowhere better to be than aboard a cruise ship with 1,000 other people, stuffed in like sardines. Today, there's nowhere better to be than at home with your family. Yesterday, dress sense was incredibly important. Today, the top doesn't need to match the bottom and the shoes are completely irrelevant provided you get the webcam angle just right. Ah, COVID-19 has made yesterday feel so far away. Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far away. Now COVID-19 is here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday, suddenly I'm not half as free as I used to be. Spending all my life in quarantine, the Wuhan flu came suddenly. How long there is to go, I don't know. The government won't say. The Chinese did something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, I chose when my mum could come and stay. Now police keep Victorians away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why they ate those bats, I don't know. They just won't say. I'd never even heard of social distancing until yesterday. Yesterday. Lockdown is such a lousy game to play. I can't even go to church these days. Oh, what I wouldn't give for yesterday.
Nations having eradicated the evils of sex slavery and child marriage has turned its attention to gender equality in the computer gaming industry. Wait, females continue to be sold as slaves? And the UN's own data reveals around 12 million underage girls are forced into marriage every year? Oh, well, those girls will have to wait. Right now, the UN's Entity for Protecting Women's Welfare is focused on the pressing issue of female representation in gaming. UN Women complained via its official Twitter account last week that women make up almost half, 46%, of gamers, but you wouldn't know it by looking at the people running the gaming industry. We can only imagine the surprise when geniuses at the UN realise women comprise 50% of people using toilets. After all, you'd never know it by looking at the people running around as plumbers. That women comprise 46% of gamers is based on gamers being defined as anyone who has ever played any kind of computer game, including on their mobile phone. It's tempting to tell the social justice warriors at the UN to get back to us after they've removed Bejeweled and Candy Crush players from their statistics. And playing Farmville while waiting for the bus doesn't make you a gamer either. But even if we accept that my mother's occasional game of Words with Friends makes her a gamer, it does not follow that she therefore wants to work in the gaming industry. Liking video games doesn't necessarily translate into a desire to do a math and tech-orientated job. It would be as silly as screaming misogyny because the percentage of women who drive automobiles is far greater than the percentage of women who manufacture them. My wife wants to drive the car. The only thing stopping her from looking under the bonnet is her complete lack of desire to do so. And just because you consume something does not mean you should create it. Recent studies have shown that 99.9% of cat food eaters are cats, but you wouldn't know it by looking at the people running the cat food industry, would you? By the way, the remaining 0.1% allows for people like my cousin Eddie, who once tasted cat food while drunk. What kind of correlation would one expect to find between those who consume a product and those involved in its manufacture? I mean, if 100% of tampon users are female, a statistic that until recently was universally agreed, does that mean 100% of those involved in making women's hygiene products should be female? If the answer is no, then what percentage would be acceptable to the hand-wringers at the United Nations? The figures used to argue for diversity in the gaming industry actually prove that diversity is not required. If 46% of gamers are women, as the UN boasts, then women are clearly interested in the games that are being produced, regardless of who produces them. The United Nations gender quotas are a solution in search of a problem. Of course, the real question is why the UN cares about gaming at all. But we do hope they convince the industry to adopt gender quotas soon so that the Uyghur women in China can produce video games, just as soon as they aren't being interned and killed. World leaders stole her childhood, and now coronavirus has stolen her crisis. So there's nothing left for activist Greta Thunberg but to go back to school. The teen campaigner, dubbed the Goblin of Doom, for her incessant warnings that carbon emissions are about to destroy the Earth any minute now, has spent the past year circling the globe, lecturing world leaders and organising protests. But the same country that was exhaling a good portion of those emissions suddenly coughed up a flu bug that really did change the environment. The Chinese flu has now made travel all but impossible.
World leaders are suddenly preoccupied with an actual problem, and mass gatherings to protest a naturally occurring gas are banned for fear of contracting an unnaturally occurring virus. More than that, the great COVID-19 lockdown of 2020 has given the world a glimpse of the new normal, should Greta realise her net zero emissions dream, and no one likes it. So last year's Time magazine Person of the Year suddenly has a lot of free time on her sanitised hands. She tweeted last week, "My gap year from school is over, and it feels so great to finally be back in school again." We can all say amen to that. Though sadly for the left, it leaves them looking for a new child to take their cues from. 11 months ago, Greta was skipping class to scold world leaders at the United Nations. "You have stolen my dreams and my childhood. How dare you?
How dare you?"
Watching world leaders grovel as the pigtailed Swedish schoolgirl staged a hissy fit from the UN Assembly podium was cringeworthy and yet morbidly fascinating. For all her faults, she has at least gotten to sneer, "How dare you?" at world leaders. What I wouldn't give to do that.
How dare you?
Along with about 9 million Israelis, I suspect, but I digress. Nothing better highlighted the hysteria or hypocrisy of warmists than world leaders inviting a kid to hector them about public policy and saving the planet. The same people who dismissed anyone expressing doubt about climate change with shouts of, "But you're not a climate scientist," suddenly changed their retort to, "But you're not a climate scientist or a Swedish schoolgirl with fiery visions." The only thing more absurd than Greta being put front and centre on the world stage was the amount of media coverage her every utterance on the weather was given. "I shouldn't be up here," Greta complained at the UN last September. "I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean." Indeed. And now, thanks not to global warming but to global Wuhaning, she is. Hollywood legend Bette Midler has become the embodiment of everything she professes to hate. The actress, who has spent the past 4 years accusing Donald Trump of xenophobia, took to Twitter last week to label his foreign-born wife as a mail-order bride who can't speak English.
"That's crazy!"
Quote, "I'm surprised Trump wants to destroy the post office. He got all his wives from it," Midler said while watching Melania Trump speak at the Republican convention. As the First Lady spoke about the need for civility, Bette Midler was working that Democratic mantra, "When they go high, we go low, and then we go lower." Oh God, she still can't speak English, Midler tweeted. Funnily enough, Melania was literally speaking English, and with more fluency than Joe Biden, might I say. English is actually one of several languages that Melania Trump speaks. Perhaps Bette Midler just didn't realise that Melania speaks with an accent, you know, like Democrat Ilhan Omar. We certainly understand that Bette Midler thinks with an accent. The self-proclaimed anti-racist loves diversity as long as blacks and immigrants behave exactly the way they're all supposed to. Last year, for instance, Midler tweeted a photo of a Trump rally with the caption, "Look, there are African-American men in this shot. How much did he pay them to be black ground?" The Hollywood star and Democrat supporter, but I repeat myself, knew blacks could not possibly be at a Trump rally by choice because she knew blacks would never do that because they're blacks. It's not that Democrats believe you can tell what a person thinks based on the colour of their skin. Rather, Democrats believe you can tell a person what to think based on the colour of their skin. Didn't Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden recently say that,
"If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black."
As a side note, Bette Midler was an enthusiastic supporter of Harvey Weinstein. So in fairness to the hocus pocus star, judging a man by the content of his character is not exactly her strong suit. If Washington is the swamp, Hollywood is the cesspit, but I digress. What Midler really hates about the Slovenian immigrant who became the First Lady of the United States is that she is a Republican. And every Democrat knows that immigrants are not meant to become Republicans. Otherwise, you might as well have a wall at the border. "Get that illegal alien off the stage," Midler tweeted in disgust that Melania Trump did not conform to her loving, tolerant, diverse, and inclusive Democrat narrative. Imagine if a conservative tweeted about an immigrant. Oh God, she still can't speak English. But Bette Midler can happily mock people from non-English speaking backgrounds without fear of being cancelled, because progressives are the cancel culture judges, juries, and executioners. Bette Midler accusing Trump of xenophobia whilst sneering at his immigrant wife's accent is a classic case, if ever I've seen one, of mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the most racist of them all? The Australian government is moving to eradicate a new Australia logo that bears an uncanny resemblance to the coronavirus just 2 months after it escaped from a state-sponsored design laboratory. The logo was released to the world in July after reports that a team of specialists, including Qantas CEO Alan Joyce and mining magnate Andrew Forrest, had been secretly experimenting on the new logo for years. The government, of course, has denied this, insisting that the logo originated in a woke market where batty ideas were regularly ingested. Whatever its origins, last week a report in The Australian said the government would act swiftly to quarantine the virus-like logo before it spread to international trade shows and exhibitions. Meanwhile, the World Health Organization tweeted, "Preliminary investigations have found no clear evidence that the marketing logo can spread anything at all, including Australia's reputation, for anything good." Researchers struggling to unlock the meaning of the logo said it vaguely resembled a glow of wattle, but warned that it was unlike anything they'd ever seen before. Those exposed to the logo, even when wearing a mask, reportedly become immediately confused. Researchers warned there was currently no drug available to help people understand the new logo. "It looks most like a virus," researchers said. "What we know for sure is that it was designed by a committee, which explains the strange mutation from something easily recognisable to something dangerously incomprehensible like this. It's believed government ministers are concerned that if allowed to spread, the logo could cost the nation far more than the $10 million spent developing it in lost trade opportunities. If the logo cannot be eradicated, scientists will attempt to alter the existing design so as to minimise damage." But the Daniel Andrews government is urging Canberra to reconsider its eradication strategy. Instead, they have offered to employ a security firm, specialising, of course, in diversity and inclusion, to spread the logo throughout Victoria where it could become the official and easily recognisable coat of arms. Well, that's all we've got time for on this episode of the James McPherson Show. I hope you enjoyed it and I look forward to your company next Tuesday. But in the meantime, make sure you tune into Pillow Talk this evening. If you go to the goodsource.news website, that's goodsource, S-A-U-C-E, goodsource.news. You can find the links to Pillow Talk, a great interview program hosted by my friend Dave Pillow, who I owe a great deal of thanks to as well for producing this podcast. Check it out, be part of it tonight, and I look forward to your company next Tuesday.
The Good Source is amplifying leading conservative voices from Australia and New Zealand. Together, we're providing viewers and listeners, as well as readers, diverse formats and a better source of news and opinions, without the constant victim-oppressor, social justice warrior rhetoric or PC fear of reality. You can help us grow this important initiative by becoming a supporter at goodsource.news today. The James McPherson Show is a production of The Good Source, written and presented by James McPherson. To watch, listen to, or read more media without the SJW narratives or PC fact filter, visit goodsource.news. That's good, SAUCE.news. Become a Good Source supporter for exclusive access to live and unedited interview recordings, including the conversations before and after the show.